the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
All right, it is the world's greatest podcast with the Coach Whisper, two-time ACC Coach of the Year, the great Seth Greenberg. I'm Dan Dokic. We are your definitive podcast on all things college hoops. And Seth, it is, while we tape this, it is in the afternoon on Tuesday. News just came down that the NCAA, let me straighten this out. It's not the NCAA. It's not a bunch of dudes voting on it. It's the schools voting on it. Schools have voted that, yes, student athletes can make money off of their likenesses. What was your first reaction, Seth?
I don't think they had any other choice with everything that was going on politically around them. But I also think it's a good idea. Now, here the question is how will it be executed? And they're talking about 2021 having it in place. This committee has done what they were supposed to do. Here are my first two things. Number one, why did anyone from the NCAA even address this issue at all while they had a working group investigating it and coming forth with some type of proposal? So every time they opened up their mouths, you know what they did? They just gave my guy Jay Billis a chance to just whack him on the top of the head like a whack-a-mole. Instead of, you know what? Sometimes less is more. Because if they just waited and then this committee came forward, made the recommendations, and it was unanimously approved, you know what? That would have been a PR home run win for the NCAA. So in the process of getting to where they are today, they kind of hurt themselves. Second thing. The one quote that was interesting is they said they wanted to make sure it was equitable along all for all teams and all divisions. Dan, let's be real right now. There's nothing equitable between Kentucky and Penn, between Penn and some division, Coast Guard Academy in D3. So look, it's not going to be equitable. The biggest thing they have to do is now what measures are they going to have in place to make sure that this doesn't create a legalized cheating situation where people basically abuse the idea of NIL. Look, let people use it for in social media. Let people use it to have an opportunity to do clinics. If they can get some type of endorsements that are legitimate and validated, that's great. But as long as it's executed in a way where we're just basically not creating an opportunity for people to legally cheat. But look, there's no way. It's not going to be a competitive advantage for the haves like everything else is. The way the guys travel in the Power Five conferences is different than the way you guys travel at Hartford and, you know, and Central Connecticut. That's just the way it is. That's an inherent advantage. You're not going to create a totally level playing field. You can't legislate that.
You can't. There's no way. One of the interesting things for me is, all right, they want to ensure that all student athletes have the same opportunities. That means women, same opportunity as men. That means field hockey, same opportunity as football. I think we're a long way, Seth, from figuring this whole thing out because that doesn't seem so easy. And I go back to what Steve Alford, the coach at Nevada, just said. And he was right. When asked, he said, look, I would have made a lot of money at Indiana during his playing career. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, who else would have during that particular time? There were some Olympians, you know what I mean? There was a couple football players that were drafted, a couple of us basketball. Uwe was a first-round pick. I just don't know how you can say, hey, look, we're going to provide the same opportunity, I guess, by having the same rules, but obviously the rules and the money and the endorsements are going to be executed differently.
Yeah, and look, you could, as long as you have the same rules in place and it's the same opportunity, quote unquote, for all athletes, male, female, different sports, then you know what? That's all there is. Cause in the end, who's going to have a market value? Like that's the real thing. I mean, and I think that, you know, the biggest thing that's going to go on and, you know, is what is the market going to bear? You know, what is the actual market going to bear? And I think that's kind of the biggest question when we move forward, because it really comes down to, you know, what will be legitimately available to these guys, because, you know, there's a difference between, you know, creating a fair market and then just creating a market to basically find a way to legally enhance the value of a scholarship, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And, you know, look, I'm all for it, but I'll tell you this right now. If I'm a car company, I'm not letting a student athlete represent my car company because I'm one bad night away from one tweet, one text, one stupid thing away. I'd have to be very careful. I don't know. I'm glad it's out there. I'm glad they're going to work on it. As they said, you've got to change. You've got to move forward. But I think we're a ways away from figuring this whole thing out. And I think a lot of the money's going to be overblown. I guess. All right, let me ask you this. And we're going to talk to Tom Izzo about this. How do you handle a locker room when one guy's making, I don't know, 20,000 and he's scoring 8 a game, 10 a game, and the other guy is making 1,000 and he's scoring 20 a game? I don't know. How do you handle all that?
You know, I think the bigger thing is, like, so all these guys can be up to get agents, and the agents obviously going to go and try to cut deals for their players and, you know, that they're representing, because they're going to get their 10% on any appearance and 20% on any real endorsement like anyone else does. And then what will happen within the locker room of multiple players are going for, say, the same endorsement or the same speaking opportunity, the same autograph situation? How that is going to be handled? Yeah, that could create a situation, but, you know, it really is the difference between an inducement and a fair market value in the end. Like, is this going to open up opportunity for players to get basically an inducement to attend a specific institution? Or are they going to find a way to create some type of barometer, some type of regulatory device to make sure that, you know, if you do sign some type of agreement, you're getting, you know, basically the fair market value, not exceeding the market value. I don't know how you monitor that, but I think that's going to be one of the challenges when it comes to, you know, opportunity across the board for all athletes in all sports. Look, I mean, it's real simple. The market will bear out that, you know, there'll be certain athletes, just like there are certain athletes at every level, professionally, coaches collegiately, you know, certain people are worth more and certain people are in greater demand. It's in any aspect of society. All right. That, you know, certain people are more, it's more beneficial to develop a relationship with someone that has, quote unquote, maybe a greater following, who is an influencer. I think that's the area where money's going to be made. The money's going to be made in the social media aspect. You know, the whole idea of influencers is become a phenomenon to me, a social media influencer. You know, a Zion Williamson would have made a ton of money as a social media influencer. Here's my better question for you. You hear all the complaints about time. You know, players don't have enough time. They don't have enough time to study and go to class and work on their game, and there's no time. Well, now we're adding something else to the equation. What if a kid has a study hall? What if a kid has a team meeting? What if he has a team function? What if he has a Saturday practice, but he has an opportunity to make $5,000 in an appearance somewhere? What happens when that happens? As a coach, you've got to obviously have your core beliefs and your non-negotiables. And you have to prioritize things, because in the end, again, and I'm saying it, the actual scholarship has a value. It has a value. You know, right now in politics, all right, what are the two big things in the debate? Healthcare and education, right?
Yeah.
Those are the two big things in the presidential, healthcare and education. Well, I'll tell you one thing. One thing about college athletics, you've got all your healthcare taken care of, and obviously you're getting an opportunity to get a world-class education. Forget about the meals. Forget about cost of attendance. Forget about charter planes. Forget about staying in Ritz-Carltons. Forget about masseuses and nutrition bars and everything else. There's an inherent value to a degree. Forget about life-altering generational graduates that then have an opportunity to have their children become graduates. There's an inherent value to it. And we cannot lose track of the academic component. If it just becomes a fiscal opportunity for a select few, then are we losing track of the big picture of how someone can really change their station in life?
Well, we already have. I mean, because all I see is, you know, whenever you talk to somebody that wants to pay players, they say, yeah, take the education out of it. Well, you can't take the education out of it, because you said it was generational, and you're 1,000% right. But that's an easy thing to do, and all the sheep go along with that. Of course we have lessened the value of education across the board, because now all we talk about is the overinflated education, blah, blah. And that's total crap, because student athletes graduate at a far higher level. It offends me when people say, the thing that I would say simply is this. I get what the NCAA is trying to do. They're trying to say at least amateurs should be playing against amateurs, and we're not going to make this professional sports. But aren't we almost by definition making this professional sports by doing this? Aren't we by definition paying kids to play and advertise?
The institutions aren't paying them.
You're right.
The way they're getting around it, it's an outside entity that is allowing them to use their name and likeness like any other student on that campus would have that same opportunity. The difference is not every other student on that campus has special housing. Not every student on that campus has early registration. Not every student on that campus has a nutrition and a fueling station and unlimited meals and are flying on charter planes and having masseuses and having individual workout guys and having special academic support services available to them. So look, I mean, I think it's great, but the reality is that we keep on forgetting that the actual college experience and what a quote unquote student athlete is receiving is there's a hard dollar
value to it. Why do you think just because somebody can go out and do a photo shoot for a car company, why do you think we're forgetting about their education?
I don't know if we're forgetting about it, but I just think we've spent so much time not talking about it. You and I talked this afternoon. I mean, I had a kid in Jamon Gordon. He's from Jacksonville, Florida. Really, really tough. One of the toughest blocks in all of Jacksonville, Florida. Came to Virginia Tech, earned his degrees, played overseas. He's bought a bunch of homes. He's renovated them. His daughter is an elite student in a private school now. His ability to take advantage of Virginia Tech and the degree he received is changing the cycle.
All right. He's a really good player. Would he have been able to make money on top of getting his degree? Why is that a bad thing? That's the one thing I'm having a problem with.
No. What do you have had a chance at Virginia Tech on top of it? I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting thing. I mean, you know, he played right after the Vic era. He might have been up. You know, Virginia Tech is a small community. Could have picked up some money. Yeah. And you know what? That would have been great. I would have no problem with it. But here's my concern. Will players and athletes, first of all, the whole idea that the governor said there's no such thing as a student athlete is just
absolutely
absurd.
That's
just
dumbest,
a political statement.
Yes, that's just idiotic.
To gain favor.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
California's governor who showed himself to be an idiot. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like that was the most absurd thing that I've ever heard in my life. I mean, it's such an insult to every single guy that busted their tail playing, but also busted their tail in a classroom to earn a degree, to change their station in life, to better themselves. And all of a sudden you're saying, oh, well, that, you know, there's no such thing. Well, you know, like, here's the deal. There are former players that are doctors and lawyers and judges and teachers and coaches and business owners and everything else. But, oh, no, there's no such thing as a student athlete. That guy's a joke. You know, it's a joke. And the whole idea of partnering up with LeBron, and that's great. You know what that was? He wants votes. I mean, if you partner up, if you're living in Southern California and you become in partnership with LeBron, that's probably going to help you and your image and your likability. And that's great. But to say something that stupid is almost ignorant, especially since the guy, I guess, played baseball at Santa Clara. Mm-hmm. So how do you become governor if there's no such thing as a student athlete?
Whatever. So now, does this mean that all this goes away? All the governors, all the lawyers, Anthony Gonzalez, all this goes away?
I think that, here's my question. Do you think that athletes in the past are now going to, once they see this happening and say, wait a second, do we want restitution for the opportunities that we could have had?
Oh, man.
I don't know. I don't know the legalities, the legal side of that, number one. Number two is, does it go away? It all depends on how it is implemented. It does not go away if the restrictions are so severe that it doesn't open up open market and opportunities for the athlete. If the restrictions are so severe that it limits the opportunities, then I think it does not go away. If it is basically what it sounds like it says it's going to be, it's that it's basically, it's going to be an opportunity for these athletes to be treated no differently than any other student on campus, to be able to pursue the same opportunities any others that would be available to any other student on campus, then I think it goes away. All right. Well, here's the deal. No, because remember, the one thing is, you know, and we're going to be playing it a little later from now that Tom Izzo said, actually, I spoke to someone else yesterday because, you know, I am the coach whisperer.
Yes.
When is enough enough? Like, here's the thing. We're going to create this opportunity for name, image, and likeness. Is that going to stop cheating in college basketball? That's the question. I mean, is that going to stop? Is that going to just alleviate all the problems and clear up all the issues and all the ills of cheating college basketball? Or, you know what? You still have the money managers that are going to want favor and want to sign guys early. You still want to have the agents that are going to want to basically create relationships and have influence. You're going to still have institutions that, you know what? They might not have the resources within their community, but they have their own resources. Cause that's the new way of cheating.
What is cheating?
Is coaches basically using their own money to, and eliminating the middleman to secure commitments.
Well, now is that legal?
Well, not unless you sign a personal services guy. That's the whole idea. You know, is it going to be inducement based or is it going to be fair market based? Cause I don't know how a coach could sign a player to a personal services contract, quote unquote. I'll give you a better one. Like NBC Sports, they own Notre Dame football. What would stop them? They want Notre Dame football to be good because they want Notre Dame football to rate. What would stop them from saying, you know what? We're going to help. We're going to create these internships of some sort, pay absorbent amounts of money, and we're going to do everything we can to get the best football players in the country to go to Notre Dame, which is going to increase the value of our broadcast and generate even greater revenue. Ooh, how about
that? Why would that be wrong?
I'm not saying it is wrong.
Well, it is wrong.
Could that happen?
It is wrong. It is wrong when you look at, okay, does everybody have the same opportunities? That would make it wrong, according to what the NCAA just set out today, correct?
Yeah, that's the way I would look at it, because it wouldn't be equal opportunity across the board. But here's the thing. There's an inherent difference between Notre Dame and, let's just say, in football. Those schools have an advantage no matter what. Like how do you not see that Kentucky, Duke, Kansas, Carolina, any Power Five school that has any type of support, tradition, resources, doesn't have an inherent advantage over anyone who's not in a Power Five school, almost excluding Gonzaga, maybe VCU, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I couldn't even tell you how many other. I mean, a MAC school's at a disadvantage. That's not a level playing field.
Unless, let me throw this out to you.
Memphis would have an advantage. Memphis has the resources.
Let me ask you this. Indiana State mm-hmm. gets Larry Bird, says, Larry, we want to get back to the day. We want to get everything we can. We want to get a pile of money from you. And let's just say, for the sake of argument, Larry Bird's up for this, right? You find it a booster. So we want to find the five richest Indiana State alums, and we want to pay the best five players in Indiana over the next 5 years to come here, 3 years. We want a powerhouse, and we're going to make them offers that Indiana University can't do, blah, 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 blah. Let's say they, for the start, they're more organized. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it give them a better chance as opposed to the way it is right now? If they can galvanize their most wealthy alumni?
Yeah, they can, but they're still in the Missouri Valley.
Right. No, but I'm just saying, money talks.
The vehicle to get those kids on the stage that they would want to play despite the money. If the money was so great, there was a discrepancy. It's almost like a guy taking less money to play in the right market. You know what I mean? In professional sport. But yeah, right. Man, will that be an opportunity for some quote unquote? See, I think there are high major programs in mid-major leagues. Like Gonzaga's not a mid-major. Like we did an article the other day about mid-majors. You know, like Gonzaga's not a mid-major. I don't care. You can call them what you want. You can call their league mid-major, but there's nothing mid-major about the way Gonzaga conducts their business. I don't think VCU is really a mid-major. They play in a mid-major conference, but they conduct their business. If you've been in their facilities, you would say, you know what? This is a high major facility. They travel and charter. How they treat their players. They have incredible cost of attendance, but the vehicle that they play in is mid-major. So that would be an interesting scenario. And I think that you will see some schools potentially maybe emerge, like a Western Kentucky. We see it already. I mean, before the NIL, you see the players that they're getting. Could that create a similar type opportunity for more quote unquote mid-majors to elevate their status by galvanizing a certain group of boosters to really making a commitment? It goes back to the same thing. The difference between inducement and fair market value. There's a big difference.
I agree. I think it's going to be interesting. And do you think ultimately, is this a good day for college basketball? Not for student athletes and all the, you know, all the little whiny guys that for what? Let me ask you a question. Why is the public so for athletes getting paid? I don't think the public is necessarily. I think like young people like are, but I think people that have, you know, put kids through college aren't. But why are so many people so adamant about this?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, because here's the thing, because people are unrealistic about the monies, and we've had this conversation. There are 90, like the NCAA, there are 90 Division I championships. 85 of them lose money. Now, of the ones that make money, it's real simple. You'd be surprised, all right? Men's basketball, ice hockey, men's lacrosse, wrestling, and baseball. Football's not one of those, because the money, the NCAA does not make money off the college football championship. They're all privately owned individual bowls or owned by ESPN. So like you got to understand that. So there's 90 championships run by the NCAA. 85 of them lose money. 85 of them lose money through Division I, II, and III. So like, you know, on a college campus, when people say, you know, well, Nick Saban makes $9 million, John Calipari makes $8 million, Coach K makes $10 million. Well, you know, if there's enough money to pay those guys, why can't we pay the players? Well, here's the deal. Those guys, they can't afford for those guys not to pay those guys, because those guys create revenue to support Title IX. Those guys create revenue to support non-revenue sports, because they're not producing any money. They're just costing money. And if we say that we're going to treat college athletics that it's a business, well, if teams are hemorrhaging money at $4 million a pop, a normal business would what? If you have too many properties that are losing $4 million a year, a normal business would do what? They would no longer be in business. They would shut down that entity, that property, and reinvest that $4 million they're losing into something they can gain a profit on. But because of Title IX, which is a great thing. I got three daughters that play college sports. I mean, I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. But the whole idea of, well, it's a business. Well, it is a business, but it's a business that has a lot of properties that lose a lot of money. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I really do. It does make sense. I'm interested.
And I'm a big woman sports. I mean, like I went to every one of my daughter's volleyball games. I watched my daughter cheer. She cheered at Virginia Tech. I mean, I'm a big woman sports fan, but I mean, if we just say it's just a business, well, you know, businesses aren't run the way college athletic programs are run. Really, the only business side is you better make sure you keep that great coach that puts people in the stands and helps you raise money. That's the face of your university. That's an ambassador for your university, so that he can create the revenue needed to support programs that do not generate money and lose money.
Yeah, let me throw this out to you. Richard Burr, senator from North Carolina. Here's a tweet from him literally 2 minutes ago. Listen to this. I think this is interesting. If college athletes are going to make money off their likeness while in school, their scholarships should be treated like income. I'll be introducing legislation that subjects scholarships given to athletes who choose to cash in to income taxes. How about that?
Wow. That's a great one right there. You got to send me that tweet.
I will send you that tweet. That just came out right now. And
well, here's the thing.
Now, of course,
attendance.
Now he's going to be, you know, vilified already. The response, how are you such a horrible human being? Why should student athletes get for free, which people the same age working jobs have to be taxed on? Why should student athletes get this for free?
Yeah, most students leave college with a significant amount of
debt. But if you're working, Seth, if you're working at the, like a lot of my friends refereed and worked mm-hmm. at Knicks and a couple other places.
You have a lot of friends at Knicks.
Well, I got my mail at Knicks. Knicks, for those of you that don't know, one of the great college bars in the history of the world, literally send me my mail in 86 through 89. And then I met a, you know, and then I met a girl. But anyway, Seth, everybody else that gets money gets taxed. Everybody. You work in Intramuros, you get taxed. You work at Knicks, you get taxed. I mean, why should college athletes not get taxed if, in fact, we are going to open this thing up to compensation, likeness compensation? Why shouldn't they be taxed? It's an interesting question.
It's a great question. What happens to cost of attendance? Is that because that becomes a salary? Does that become taxed?
That's what I'm saying. Now, you know what's happening. All the bleeding hearts are losing their mind. All the little blogger boys out here are absolutely going crazy, right? I mean, all these little guys, how are you so proud of being such an awful human being? And then some guy from the Banner Society, you know, says, who blanked in your corn chips? Hey, look, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's not right. But if you're going to go out and make money and you want to be like everybody else, which is apparently the goal, my friend Kevin Custer worked Amway 5 different jobs to put himself through school and got taxed on every dime. Why aren't athletes?
Now, they would say he didn't generate any money for the institution, where these guys that are playing are generating revenue by their participants.
I would argue, okay, then let's do this. Let's see how many tickets were sold before Jimmy Joe, the offensive tackle at Ohio State, got to Ohio State. Let's see how many sponsorships were sold after Jimmy Joe, the offensive tackle for Ohio State, got there. Everything's sold. The TV rights are sold. The radio sponsor, the radio rights are sold on major institutions. Sponsorships are sold. So some, you know, I see, you know, there was.
So you mean when Junior finished at Ohio State, there wasn't a big dip in season ticket sales?
Look, I've said it, and you know I love Junior, and I love myself, but I had zero impact on attendance at Indiana University when I played. And you fast forward 40 years later, Junior on a scholarship, zero impact on any of it, which is what 99.9% of the kids have zero impact. And let's be honest, how long does ESPN, let's stay in the Big Ten, the Big Ten rights between CBS, Fox, ESPN, and I thought there was one on the Big Ten Network. Have been sold for the next 10 years. So it doesn't matter if Slim Pickens comes in to play center at Ohio State. The rights are sold. The big money's already done. He don't matter. I'm sorry, he doesn't. Matters to winning and losing.
I agree with that, and I also agree with the conversation we had in the past is if, like, you know, everyone talks about, you know, jersey sales and the amount of money that's lost in jersey sales. Well, the name, you know, we used the Tyler Hansborough example. Tyler Hansborough on a North Carolina jersey is probably worth something, but because it's got North Carolina in the front. Tyler Hansborough on a Mad Ants jersey, probably not the same thing.
Exactly.
That's just the way it is. And, you know, if players are going to pursue opportunities to make money in licensing from uniforms, then they're going to have to pay licensing fees to the universities for the right to put that university's logo on the front of the jersey. Now, how many guys are going to sell enough jerseys to profit from that if they want to put their name on the back of the jersey?
Great question.
I don't know the answer. I don't even know the legal aspect of it, but I do know that, you know, people pay licensing fee. If you want to use if you're Nike and you want to have North Carolina, you know, apparel, then you have to pay a licensing fee to the institution and the trademark. So
fascinating, you know, stuff, man.
Here's the thing. Here's the deal. It's not as simple as it sounds. Everyone wants to say, oh, it's easy. It's not easy. It's difficult. It's complex. And that's going to be the interesting thing in the next 2 years, because, or year and a half, because they want this in place by 2021.
Kyle Wickens calls me a very profane name and tells me to burn in hell just because I retweeted that guy's bird. It's interesting. Hey, I'm telling you, the taxation part of it is interesting. The licensing fee is interesting. I personally hope that student athletes make as much as they can make. But as you just said, and I think you said it absolutely right, this ain't all that easy, peoples. And I guarantee you there's some sneaky language in there that lawyers are going to have to parse through before we get this done. Hey, Tom Izzo came on my show. Seth joined us, and we had a talk on everything that we just discussed. We also talked about Michigan State, which, oh, by the way, first time in the Izzo era, maybe first time in Michigan State history, the number one team in college basketball resides at Michigan State. Tom Izzo, nice enough to join us.
Seth Greenberg and Dan Dockich and Tom Izzo. College basketball is starting tonight. The Hoosiers take on Gannon. Are you kidding me? The Hoosiers take on Gannon, and look, college basketball, that means it has started. That means we need to talk to the master, the boss. Coach Tom Izzo joins us. You and I just got off the line. Let's talk some ball. You good at talking? Are we good with talking about so much other stuff in college basketball, Coach? How are you?
I'm good. It's been a little bit crazy around here, as you can imagine, with, you know, between some good things that have happened and some bad things that are going to happen, but it's kind of the way the world works right now with, you know, you get picked high and you lose your probably most experienced guy in Josh, and then you know, we've had Kyle Arns out, so we got our share of things already, but probably so did a lot of teams.
Hey, I do want to talk about Langford. That, like, I was at the Big Ten media day, had a chance to talk to him, yeah, and do some things. What a great dude, yeah, man. What's the story?
Well, the story is he had a you know, that navicular bone. He had a little fracture. I guess it's one of the poorest of the, if I remember back to my anatomy days, poorest of the 206 bones in your body to get any kind of blood to. And so we took longer to heal. We kept him out. We sent him to Dr. Andrews, the specialist, the ball specialist, and kept him out an extra probably month and a half and worked his way back. And he was really doing well. And, you know, in the meantime, Dan, he was a guy that all summer he lifted, he kept his body weight exactly where he wanted. He used to sit in a chair. I'd look down in the gym, he'd be sitting in a chair so he didn't lose his shot, you know. He'd be shooting like almost from the three. It was amazing what he did. And you're right, you know, very religious kid, very good student. And, you know, as he went, they don't know if it's the stress of, you know, when you rehab, when you have an injury, like if you have a knee injury, sometimes your back goes. And if you have a back injury, sometimes your knee gets bothered. And this one, it was just another spot down there, and they found a hot spot. So it, you know, it doesn't look real promising, to be very honest about it. But it's, you know, we're just going to keep our fingers crossed that time will heal. It's just a bad place, a bad bone, and a bad situation for a great, great kid.
Yeah, the great Seth Greenberg joins. Seth?
Yeah. I'm not – well, we're in this thing together a little bit. And, Tom, here's the question I have for you. It's obviously bad things happen to really, really good people, and he is a terrific kid.
Oh, man.
How do you move forward losing a guy that – like, let's face it, you know, Cassius Winston's preseason player of the year.
Yeah.
But Josh Langford was the guy that started from day one as a freshman.
So yeah, he was the only one, you know, Keston started – as freshman year, played about 12 minutes a game, and Xavier played about 8 minutes a game, and, you know, Aaron Henry at the end of his freshman year played a lot more, but Josh was the stability. He was my poor man's Gary Harris, who you know well, Danny, from down there in Indy, you know, kind of one of those guys that could play both ends of the court. And I always said, you know, thinking of yourself back in the day when you stopped Michael Jordan single-handedly,
yes,
that some guys are good defenders and some guys are good shooters, but most guards don't do both. Josh was the guy that did both. How do you move forward? Well, we put Kyle Arns in there. He was really having a hell of a summer after he got healthy from that bad sprain. And, And then everything was going good, and then we scrimmaged Gonzaga, and he got hurt in the game. So he's been out since. So now we've moved to a freshman, Rocket Watts, and I've been very impressed with him. I think that if there's been a negative or a positive with all the negative, he has been – he's a ball-hawking guard that can make shots, and he can pass it, and he is quick. That's – the nickname Rocket.
It's one of the coolest names in college basketball, really. I mean, if he wears a headband.
What would your nickname be, Dan?
Huh?
What would your nickname be? If he's Rocket, what is your nickname?
Spudnik.
Ground Dockage. I was just Ground Dockage. Run lower, jump slower. Run slower, jump lower, whatever. Hey, I do.
What about a guy like Dave? Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I did want to ask. I mean, this is a sarcastic question because I was hot about it and said so on ESPN. But Aaron Henry is okay after being yelled at last year. He's okay. He survived. You know, the world is okay with Aaron Henry, right? It's all
good.
You know,
we just got him out of the hospital last week. You know, he kind of... like you say, it was.
I was.
Aaron Henry's got the greatest family, man. His dad's way tougher than I am. I promise you that.
Hey, his high school coach was a bad man, Coach James, with those boots.
That's exactly what I heard. And so he was raised well. Aaron Henry's had a hell of a. Hey, you look at the games after that crazy incident. He got better and better. Right. He had a hell of a summer. He's going to step up. I still got big three. You know, I still got Cassius. Aaron and of course Xavier, and the biggest trick that we thought we'd have from the beginning is find a four man to replace Kenny Goins, who, as you guys know, averaged 8-9 points, but he was kind of a glue guy. In fact, both him and McQuaid were glue guys. I think you had two really good defenders that were about winning and not about stats, and so we're working on that, you know. Tonight we're going to start Kithier there, and we're going to start a freshman at the point. But Gabe Brown is going to be very important still. Kyle Arnes, hopefully, if we get him back by next week, will still be a – you know, he played 20 minutes a game last year, very solid, tough kid, kind of guys you guys would like, tougher than nails, and a very good athlete.
What kind of process did Gabe Brown make? Because, I mean, he's a guy who can make shots and stretch the defense a little bit. Where do you see him now?
Well, he gained about 15 pounds, and that was good. He was real skinny, and so we've made some progress there. I think his next biggest step, you know, he's a 6'7 kid with a 7-foot wingspan, and he's a very good rebounder. He's got to improve his off-the-ball defense. He's pretty good on the ball, but off the ball sometimes gets a little lost, and that's what we've been working on. But I'd say he, too, has made some big strides. You know, he had two big games, one in the Big Ten tournament and one against LSU, where he had 15 in the NCAA tournament. But I think consistency, and I'm not sure that I've had anybody work harder than him this summer. That's encouraging. So I got to find a four-man, which he could play a little bit, but between Marcus Bingham at 6'11", you know, gained 25 pounds to move up to thin. He moved up to thin with the 20, 25 pounds.
Yeah, that's a skinny dude, man.
Yeah, skinny dude, but can shoot it. And then I really like my two freshmen, Malik Hall and my other freshman, Marble, from Texas, is strong, tough. Reminds me of a former player, Alan Agana, you know, a little more skilled. And then, of course, Thomas Kithier, who probably plays the best right now off of Xavier. So, you know, there's nothing to feel sorry for. It's just that we're going to have to make some quick adjustments against some very good teams in the first 26 days of the season.
Hey, Seth, can I give myself a little shout-out here? Do you mind, Coach Tom?
Wait, Seth, I ever stopped you from giving yourself a shout-out?
Thomas Kithier's mother comes up to me, follows me on Twitter, comes up to me every game and says, Dan, I got to tell you, I tape every game you do because I learn basketball from you. So I am all in on Thomas. Play free Thomas Kithier, Izzo. Free Kithier.
I'm starting him tonight.
Damn right.
Just to please you.
Thank you.
I'm a pleasing kind of guy.
Yes, you are. Free Kithier, Seth. Free him. Damn it.
The medication is kicking in.
I know. The hip surgery, the meds, it's unbelievable.
You guys make me laugh even on a game day.
How fast has that had all this new attention?
How is Cassius doing with it?
Yeah, I mean, he is the man in college basketball.
Yes,
right
he
now.
Is.
Yeah, and yet, I thank God, I don't see it going to his head, but nothing ever has, you know. I call him cool, casual Cassius, and sometimes that drives me nuts, because to me it's too cool and too casual sometimes. But the other side of it, playing for me and having all this pressure on you, it's probably a good thing he is cool and casual, because he, you know, gets the job done the other way. He's just one of those guys that I think nothing bothers him, you know. And so far he seems to be able to handle it good. But let's face it, here in the next week, it's going to start upgrading a lot. And but he's had a good summer. His legs are a lot stronger, shooting it well. And, you know, I think he has improved defensively. But, you know, a week from tonight, we'll get to see against Kentucky, because they got some awfully athletic guards, how he does.
All right. Everybody needs to be paid, apparently, Coach. I mean, this is a tough thing for coaches, is it not? I mean, you can't come out and say, well, players can't get paid. You'll get crushed. But you got to stay true to who you are. How are you handling, and not necessarily because there's nothing you can do if legislation goes to different state levels, legislators, but how are you handling the PR aspect of this? Because it's a dicey thing for coaches, is it not?
Boy, you said it really well. You know, I mean, there's a reality to the whole thing. I wish my first thing I'd like to say is I've always hoped players could get a little more. You know, what is a little? Or what is enough?
Right.
You know, I don't think if we made it 10,000, 100,000, like I heard Fox from Kentucky, they interviewed him and they said, well, if this new rule goes into effect, would that have kept you at Kentucky? And I can't use the four-letter word he used, but at the end of it, he said that no.
Right.
I mean, he didn't even blink. I mean, he laughed about it. So I mean, we're not, you know, that's number one. I'd like to help the kids. You know, I was hoping we'd come up with something with merchandising and dividing it up. I don't know if you can. You know, I don't know what the unintended consequences are. I hear all these people commenting on it, and I have to agree with Cal a little bit that I just don't think people understand what the unintended consequences would be. I mean, can you imagine locker rooms? I mean, you were a player. Seth, I can't remember back in the Peach Bucket day if you were a player or just coached, but both of you understand the game a lot, and you understand locker rooms, and I just don't know what it would be like in there. I don't know how it would happen. I don't know how it would be applied. I get all these people, including governors and this and that. I wish I knew what they must know, because I can't figure it out even sitting here. I think the bottom line for me, I hope, you know, players get stuff that is enough to survive on and enjoy their experience at college. But somehow we do got to realize there is a value to the education you get. Yeah. And we've lost that concept. I mean, if you look at politics right now, what are the two biggest things they talk about? Healthcare and educational debt. That's what everybody's running their ticket on. Well, our guys never have any educational debt. And I think that that's getting lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, we're actually debating it with your guy Billis tomorrow in our seminar. And like I what you just said, Tom, is like the value of an education we're devaluing. And how about what do you think you spend on a yearly basis per player when it comes to housing, food, health care, nutrition, massage therapists, travel,
tutors.
Tutors.
Like we're going to Maui this year, you know. I think that's the other thing. I was talking to Dan about this, that I think the experience that these kids get that maybe they won't get, when you get to travel with a team to Maui or you go to Italy like we have, or like, you know, we had a kid here one year with 17 cavities when he came in, you know. That's health care. That's taking care. That's making them better. But I'd say, like, the average out-of-state scholarship here is over, you know, $50,000, $60,000 now. And then you start adding those other things in, and it's a lot of money. I mean, and I think, you know, I do agree. I think we've We've underestimated, and what an education can bring you. I'm worried about when guys come out of high school, which is going to happen, I'm sure. Our kids going to not even get a college degree or a high school degree because they're going to be wanting to leave early to go work out with people, and agents will get them in California and Atlanta and wherever else. Now they don't even have a high school degree, and the three of us know how many of those kids are going to make it. And I had the Pistons here 2 weeks ago for their camp, and just listening to those guys talk about what the G League is like, or you know, how much they were impressed by our facilities and what these kids get. I don't know who's pushing that thing, but we're still talking. I listened to Mark Few's comments. We're still talking about, you know, like 0.001% of the people. And it seems like the experience, the money spent, I'll keep going back to the education. Education experience, I don't know about you guys. I'd still go back to college tomorrow. Mariucci and I would have a ride in our little trailer house. No pressure, no problems, no money. It was an awesome time.
Man, the great Uwe Blob and I, when he's making German food, we're drinking beer at 10 in the morning on a Saturday in the fall. Are you kidding me? The only problem you guys have in college now is you're working the kids too hard, man. Back in the day, season was over. I didn't see Coach Knight till freaking October 15th.
Yeah. You know, you're somewhat right about that. I don't think people understand what we do. I don't think they understand what the kids do. And I do think the kids should get something out of it to live on and be able to enjoy their experience. But man, I don't know how we do that. I wish the governor, I wish the president, I wish somebody would tell me how that is going to realistically work. I mean, can you imagine car dealers, and what if kids transfer, and what if I that's so many what ifs. I just don't know, and yet everybody's selling it like it's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
The big argument is that the kids have no time, you know, because, you know, between class and study hall and meetings and practice and other
Xbox 6 hours a day and look at their phones 10 hours a day. I promise you that.
I guarantee you. Here's my complaint, and tell me if you agree, disagree, whatever. But having a son that played and got a scholarship eventually at Ohio State, I learned this. I get offended, Coach, when people tell me this is unpaid labor. Kids aren't being paid. I know this. My son, when you go from a walk-on and you're paying $52 at Michigan to you're paying nothing at Ohio State and getting a $540 check every 2 weeks as part of the, you know, what do they call it?
Cost of attendance.
Yes, the cost of attendance.
Some guys are getting $5,000-$6,000 on Pell Grant.
Yeah, I mean, that's real money to me, Coach. I mean, whether it's enough or not, I don't know, and I'm with you. But that's real money being paid to kids for his 20 hours. I'm changing the direction here, but I got to have you on record with this. How closely do you watch the 20-hour rule?
Danny, you're not going to believe this because you think I'm certifiably crazy. And by the way, that's Seth and you, not me. But I would say that I never go over it. Never.
Right. That drives me nuts.
Never.
People think you do.
It's not even close. Oh, I thought you thought I might.
No.
Not even close.
No.
Right now. I asked my trainer if I can practice. I asked my nutritionist if we want to have a meeting, you know, the strength coach. I mean, I'll bet you with film and strength coach and practice. I mean, back in the day, there was the 3 hour, 3.5 hour practice. I know what you guys used to do
crap.
In Indiana.
No, geez.
You lose a game, you came back and practice. I know those good old days. But now there are so few days you go above 2 hours. You can only do it 4 or 5 times a week. So that's 10 hours, and you might get a couple meetings in there and a little lifting. I mean, I'll bet you're under 15 more than you're over 15.
See, I get offended, Coach. No, I was not saying you were over.
Oh,
I knew
yeah.
because people get fired now for going too many hours. ADs get fired now. Compliance get – people assume – kids, they assume two things, and I'd like you to address both. Number one – the student and student athlete is not there, which I think is crap because, you know, you've coached, I've coached, students are athletes
right,
are and the other
damn
thing is
right.
this whole well coaches always if you think it's a 20-hour work week you're nothing. No, it's a 20-hour work week because people get fired, coach.
Yeah. You know, thank God, I think what has happened with some of the players that are really good is they become a little more self-motivated.
Right.
And so they'll come in on their own and shoot or make free throws, watch a little film. But the times that I touch them compared to what it was 20 years ago is not even – it's less than cut in half. And you know what's funny is I got a lot of buddies in the NFL, and I, you know, Mariucci's on some committees, you know. Sometimes, too, the less you practice – the more injuries you have. I mean, they're talking about no contact in football. They're getting more injuries than they ever have, you know. And sometimes the less you practice, the more free time you give kids, the more problems you have. But people don't look at the unintended consequences of any of these things you do. And right now, I think we got a lot of people, you know, saying what they think is right, but I sure as hell don't know what they're talking about. I don't know if you guys do. I don't see how these things are going to be feasible. And I think that the NCAA has been put in a bad position on some of this. And do I think we should have been ahead of it? Probably. Do I think, do I think we could ever come up with a monetary figure? No way. Never. I don't think no matter what we did, it would be enough. And I just want to help the kids have a great experience, have a better life than the one they had, and then let them earn the rest by either how they play or how they study. And that's the American way that we've all been raised.
And you hit it on the head right there about on how you study. Like, I got a question for you. This is not talked about. Your biggest, say, arguments or situations with your players, basketball-wise, are guys not fulfilling what they're supposed to do academically? Where are your biggest conflicts when it comes to...
This year, I hate to say this, I've been pretty blessed. I don't have many academic problems, but I'd say over the years you have more problems academically than you do basketball-wise. I think most people would. Or this day and age, I think you might have more problems socially than you have academically or athletically. You know, you're just constantly worried about everything that goes on, and you try to... I promise you this, if I've heard people say that the NCAA, we should have been out in front of it. I promise you guys, the coaches are out in front of these social issues and trying our hardest to make sure they're right. But I think you have more trouble. You know, kids, for the most part, I've got the three L's here, guys. Kids either like it, love it, or live it. And to be great at our level, you better at least love it and probably live it. Unfortunately, I still think there's a lot of people that just like it because I think some are getting burnt out. You know, Danny, I look at your son, and he was a walk-on, and I kidded about this, even though at one time it wasn't good for either one of us. But I love what he's doing right now. He was a GA for a couple of years, reminded me of myself. I told him anytime I could help. I love guys that work their way up. There is a process to success, and it seems like this new world, we want to skip the process. And if you skip the process, you might win the battle, but you're definitely going to lose the war.
Great stuff, boss. Great stuff. Thanks for being so
Great
candid.
Stuff.
Really appreciate it, coach. Thanks.
Well,
good luck to
you. I appreciate you guys, and I look forward to talking to you guys soon.
I'll see you on Thursday.
All right, man. See you guys.
See you, coach.
My man, Tom Izzo, D squared. He never disappoints. He's straight to the point. He doesn't pull punches. The guy is as real as it gets. Now, hey, you know what we got coming up, D-Squared?
Tell me.
The start of the season, Champions Classic, and everything else that the season is going to offer us. So you know what we're going to do? What do you think we should do, D-Squared?
Oh, I think we need more podcasts.
I think we need another podcast. I think we need to do an emergency edition for Monday to preview Champions Classic and preview the first week of college basketball. What do you think about that?
I think we got to do it because it's going to be an unbelievable week. I really believe that. Starting out with a bang, and you'll be right in the middle of it.
Right in the middle. And you know what? I might even try to see if we can get joined by John Calipari. How about that?
He needs to come on.
Yeah, he hasn't been on in a while.
No.
We need to tune him up a little
yep.
bit.
Yep, let's do it.
Be better for it. Thank you for listening. And wherever you listen to your podcast or download your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcast or the ESPN app, please listen. Rate us, because you know what? We are the world's greatest podcast. And check out our brand new podcast, ESPN Daily, hosted by Mina Kimes, Monday through Friday. She takes a look at the most interesting stories at ESPN in just 20 minutes. Listen, subscribe now to ESPN Daily, wherever you find your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.